This is the I Read Comic Books podcast. This week, our show is on break, so in place of a normal episode, some of our regular guests recorded conversations about the series they're reading and the things that interest them in comics. Our show will be back to our regular episode format on July 20th.
Hi, thanks for joining us. My name is Brian Murray, sometime contributor to the I Read Comic Books podcast. Joining me today is John Francois.
Hello.
Also a contributor to the podcast.
Occasionally.
Occasionally. When we can convince him to join us in this time stream. Speaking of time stream, today we are going to talk about the passage of time in comic books and how that affects the reader's ability to enjoy them. Or if it affects the reader's ability to enjoy them. So we'll start off by stating the obvious, that comics are not a real-time medium. You know, when something happens in a comic book, it might be, you know, depending on how action-heavy the comic is, it might take 3 issues to show a 10-minute fight scene. So while for the characters in the book, only 10 minutes have passed, but for the reader, it's been 2-3 months, depending on your publishing schedule. And while that's not such a big deal in the short term, once you start getting into ongoing series, like your action comics, your detective comics, things like that, that time gap can get pretty significant.
Yes, indeed it can. Time dilation can get kind of serious, especially when you have characters who rely on technology, like Batman or Iron Man.
Oh yeah, exactly. Like, look at how outdated the old Iron Man suits look. When you take a modern sort of aesthetic and apply it to these old-timey suits, it's all blocky and unattractive to our millennial eyes.
Yeah, you mean how kind of like back then they thought that Iron Man just had armor and that was it, as opposed to technology?
Right, exactly. And so that technological gap can be one of the big stopping points. So how do you think that a creator could go about avoiding that? I know one of the things we discussed before the show started was having them use custom technology where it doesn't really have a real world analog, and so it isn't really constrained by what's happening in reality.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the most common ways that it's ignored or avoided, is if someone simply says, look, Iron Man or whatever technological character, or any character for that right. matter, has this doodad or thing or gizmo, I don't know, whatever word you want to use for it, that just does this particular task. And it doesn't necessarily have to have a correlation in the real world. And maybe it never will. Maybe it's something that just doesn't make sense, like something that folds his shirts for him that, maybe event one day might exist, but like it doesn't have to be like an android that walks around his house and just folds his shirts. Whereas in the comic, he might have that to show like, look how smart he is. He's built this from scratch. And so that's one way that I think that they can probably get around pretty easily the passage of time, is just by throwing in new gizmos that, oh, look, I've made this in my spare time. It does X, Y, or Z.
Yeah, and I think the movies get around that pretty well with the Tony Stark technology, where he has the interactive hard light computer displays, things that obviously don't exist and might exist someday.
Oh, also his garbage AIs, okay.
Yeah, and his garbage AIs. You wrap an interesting point too of the idea of just ignoring the time difference, just refusing to acknowledge it entirely. I mean, that seems kind of hacky to me, like kind of taking the easy way out. And it is certainly an option. You know, if a creator would like to just not talk about the passage of time in their comic at all.
Yeah. Especially, I feel that if a comic is set in a particular time period, so if it's a, mm-hmm. A noir detective comic, you know what you're going to expect when you go into it. You're not expecting smartphones and, mm-hmm. other gizmos and doodads. You're expecting just sort of a gritty, like, 50s detective story, or whatever period noir was from. I feel like it was from the 50s. Am I wrong there?
I want to say it was more like the 30s.
That might be right.
But
some, I don't know. Sometime way the hell before I was born.
If you'd like to correct John and I on what noir is or when it took place, please feel free to email the show. Yeah, we probably won't see those emails. Nope. But
not at all.
Your voice will be heard by someone.
It may eventually get back to us, but likely not.
Xander will scold us before the next podcast.
But so if you use a setting that doesn't really need to address the passage of time, and it's all contained within, you know, this particular setting, whether it be like 30s or, you know, the 1800s, like a Victorian mm-hmm. steampunk kind of setting, it just doesn't need to address the passage of time because that's just when it exists. But if you're trying to do something that's more modern, like anything to do with most Marvel heroes, it becomes a little more weird when you start the comic and, you know, look, Tony Stark just got this sweet new Razor phone and I'm reading the comic on my smartphone.
Right. Oh, I love Tony Stark's Razor phones. Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a great point, though. If you declare the time period it takes place in and it is not congruent with the modern day, whatever the modern day may be, you can pretty much get away with having whatever technology they would have or you think they might have in that time period. And that goes on to alternate universes as well.
Yeah. Anything involving fantasy.
Yeah, exactly. So like even like The Walking Dead, we could call a fantasy. They've given us a reason why new technology isn't happening anymore.
That's a good point.
So those people, I mean, they don't have cell phones at all anymore because there are no cell towers or satellites or I don't know. I haven't read The Walking Dead in like 4 years. I don't know what they have.
I assume they don't have cell phones. But yeah, that sort of exists out, it doesn't exist outside of a time frame because it gives you a starting point, but most technology or most other significant things, because I guess this is getting to the point where I feel that the passage of time is often in, or most often marked by new technology, you know, what's new on the horizons, because that's how I usually mark the passage of time.
And that's the kind of thing that's going to be visible in a comic book.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like you're saying with the phones, especially, that's a great point to come back to.
Yeah. And so if you put yourself in a setting like The Walking Dead, where technology, it exists in a sense that, you know, we know about it, but we don't have it because who has a smartphone? Who can charge a smartphone on the road when there's no electricity? Or, for example, Rat Queens or any of the D&D comics simply just exist in a fantasy scape where mm-hmm. time is anywhere between like, oh, the world's only 1,000 years old and this is the first age, to, you know, oh, the Elven Empire of your, you know, many, many millennia has fallen and this is the fifth age of King Jaundice the Yellow. I don't know.
Long may he reign. Let's talk about like the Ultimate Universe for a second. You know, the Marvel Ultimate Spider-Man, say. They updated all the characters, brought them forward into what we think of as a modern time. How do you think that affects a character's origin story? Because I think that, you know, Peter Parker, who's coming of age in 2001, I think was when that came out, versus Peter Parker, who was coming of age in the 1970s or whenever Spider-Man was originally put out. And I'm really showing my comic history ignorance here, but you see what I'm saying.
Yes. Well, it's, I mean, I haven't read much of the Ultimate Universe. I've read a little bit. I believe I've gone through a decent chunk of the Ultimate Avengers. And it was interesting because it showed them in a new or like updated time frame where they all had newer technology. And I keep specifically mentioning phones because honestly, I think that's probably the most significant advancement in technology, period, just because of the fact that they all have cameras now, which was one of the huge things about before, when it was like, oh, well, what happened? Well, I don't know. Let's read the paper, as opposed to, well, let's look on YouTube and parse through the billions of videos that are up of this particular event because it was in New York City and there are millions of people who live there.
But Yeah. YouTube's a great point, too.
Yeah.
I mean, there's going to be video of this new Spider-Man swinging between buildings.
Yeah. And also likely someone just followed him to where he lives with their smartphone that has like the 10 billion megapixel phone camera. Words are hard. That can zoom into his window and see him when he takes off his stupid mask and see who his face is. Like, I feel like being a superhero would be very difficult in an era of smartphones just because of how easy it is to just sort of passively snoop on people.
Yeah, I mean, especially in an age where we can track phones and things like that. I obviously don't know anything about hacking phones, if that's even the right term. But given that, you know, we assume that Peter Parker is going to be carrying some kind of cell phone, presumably it's got some kind of GPS in it. They can track his phone. I mean, they could even have, you know, if Aunt May has the Find My Friends app, or whatever it's called, on her iPad, then she could notice that this Spider-Man character always has her nephew's phone.
Oh, wouldn't that be weird if they had to buy a second phone to do, like, superhero stuff on? And, like, yeah. Aunt May just thinks that Peter Parker stays at home all day, every day?
Yeah, or, like, he's, like, she finds his second phone and thinks he's selling drugs or something.
Right, back when, like, having a phone and a pager meant you were a drug dealer.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, these are things that probably are never going to come up in a comic, because I don't think that they would necessarily be an interesting hook in any kind of larger story, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me, but I think it's fascinating.
It is interesting, because it's something that, as readers, we're acutely aware of, because we exist in and around new technology or emergent technology every day, but we're reading these stories that, again, if they exist in a fantasy scape or some sort of other story that's been removed from time, so to speak, it doesn't matter as much. But if you're reading, you know, I remember, like, when I first picked up Iron Man, the when Marvel did their one of their rebirths, I think it was back in 2012 or 13, and I started picking up Iron Man, and it was, you know, he had all this technology that for the time was rather recent, but
I want to say that was Marvel Now.
Was it? Oh gosh, I don't remember now.
Yeah. Huh. Anyway, you were saying about Iron Man?
It was clear that they had written him for that particular time period, and, you know, I guess technology hasn't changed too much, especially because Iron Man is always assumed to have bleeding edge technology, you know, like the hard light displays or artificial intelligence that just does shit for him, or other things like that, or I don't know, like a car that can turn into a robot. He doesn't have Transformers, I lied. Don't put that in the podcast.
So I think it's important to note that, like, not just technologically, but culturally, like, the landscape of the country has changed a lot in the past, you know, 70 years, 80 years since comic books really coming onto the scene. Yeah, I think that's why a big sign of that is, you know, the dislike of Superman that has cropped up. I think a lot of people roll their eyes when they hear somebody talk about Superman, because that the whole Boy Scout truth, justice, and the American way thing doesn't really resonate with contemporary culture the way it used to.
That's a good point. People love gritty, dirty, awful stories now.
Yeah, that does seem to kind of be what's in vogue right now. It's just anything that's, you know, dark and quote-unquote realistic.
Edgy.
Which I think speaks to a certain pessimism. That we don't think something, we think that something is more realistic if it's darker and more violent.
But I mean, like, I don't think they're...
I mean, it's not wrong, but... But I do think that's interesting that even in our escape from the world, we still demand that it be depressing enough.
I think part of that, though, is that I feel that a lot of the shining example of, like, human behavior, those stories were done and they've been done over and over again. And so we know what to expect out of them. And it's not that they're boring, but we know what's going to happen. You know, the good guys are going to triumph and the bad guys are going to throw a curveball at the good guys. But the good guys are going to, you know, they're going to choose the right answer and they're going to persevere anyways, despite this curveball. Whereas realistically, it might be that, well, they have to make some sort of awful sacrifice and then they have to live with that. But we've already seen the first end where they choose the correct path and also come out on top. Why not now explore the second path where they've chosen the, like, the right path where it's like, oh, if you let your wife die, then these thousands of people will live. And they let their wife die, but they can't save their wife, and now they're stricken with grief. And so I think that might be part of the reason we don't see as many of the, like, Boy Scout stories anymore.
You mean just because of the age of comic books, essentially? You know, we've had comics for so long that we've seen a lot of what they can do.
Right. And now we're branching out into other stories that we haven't done yet or that haven't been explored as much as the like the feel-good hero stories.
So are there any stories that, like, classic comic book type icons or stories or what have you, that you don't think would work if they were updated to modern times?
Oh, gosh.
And the one that jumps to mind for me is Captain America.
You mean being frozen in ice and lost forever because GPSs exist now?
Well, I wasn't thinking about that, but that is also a great point. No, I'm just thinking, like, if we completely ignore the Captain America from World War II and say that, you know, we're completely restarting the Captain America. You know, Steve Rogers is a guy who was born in 1989. I think that we would have a much harder time ending up with a character like Captain America, just because the geopolitical landscape of the late 90s, early 2000s is so much different than it was in the late 30s, early 40s.
That's a good point.
You know, I think it's harder to get as rah-rah America, yeah, now that, you know, we're fighting terrorist cells and drone striking people instead of, you know, slapping a flag on a shield and punching Hitler in the face.
Yeah, there isn't as clear a bad guy anymore. Like, I feel that Nazi Germany and Hitler gave us a pretty clear, like, hey, that's the bad guy. Let's make Captain America and he'll fight those guys, as opposed to now where things are a bit more ambiguous.
Yeah, and I think they try to touch on that a bit in the... I'm thinking specifically of the Captain America Civil War movie, where he is a more morally gray character than he used to be in the comic books. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that that's something that's been going on in comics for a while, too, is, you know, after he's thawed out, adjusting to this new world he lives in. But I think that it would be harder to have any kind of a 100% good, 100% bad split if you were starting that character off now. It would have to, like, Captain America would have to start off as a much more troubled individual.
Yeah.
And I think that the mythos behind Captain America kind of falls apart at that point. You know, it's okay to watch him fall from grace, but to have him start off on the level of us mere mortals sort of destroys the mystique of him.
Yeah, he's not really a shining exemplar of justice at that point. He's just some guy, possibly with a beer gut.
I mean, honestly, I think that we'd probably get something a lot more like the Punisher than we did Captain America.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's just one example.
Well, honestly, I think that most superheroes would probably have a drastically different story or origin story if they were created or thought of today. And not... It's hard to say that because obviously I'm thinking of these stories that have already been built upon. Like, we all know who Spider-Man is. And so it's like, well, he's like Spider-Man, but blah, blah, blah is usually a descriptor I use. Or he's like Wolverine, but blah, blah, blah. However, I think that if some teenager went into some weird science lab for a field trip, which, P.S., I don't think that would happen in the first place with they have dangerous, terrible spiders. But I digress. If a spider got free and bit him, I feel like that would be all over the news. It wouldn't just be like, ooh, I got bit. That's weird. And then go home. I feel like that would be on someone's camera, on someone's video. They put it on YouTube or like maybe CNN or, I don't know, Hello America or whatever news station is out there would pick it up and interview this kid as he's like pale and shaking and wants to die. And then the next day it's like, oh, well, what happened to Peter? Oh, he's better now. Well, that's weird. And then suddenly Peter just doesn't get seen very often. And it's like, oh, but then there's a Spider-Man character who showed up. And then I feel like people would put one and one together to make two pretty quick. Honestly, I think the only character, as far as I can think anyways, that wouldn't really have that much of a difference is Thor. Because he's got technology that's so advanced it seems like fucking sorcery to us.
Yeah, I mean, Thor's kind of one of those fantasy examples we were talking about. Like, he exists in a quote-unquote realistic world, but he is a fantasy character.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting to think of Thor as being the one constant through it all.
That or Hercules, I suppose.
Or Hercules, yeah, who's again a mythological character brought back from the public domain. I think it'd be interesting to see Superman. You know, if a strange meteor landed in some field in Kansas. I mean, you'd have half a dozen amateur astronomers showing up on their property the next morning, and the U.S. government shortly thereafter. I don't think that Ma and Pa Kent could do much against the Patriot Act.
See, I don't know about that, because I feel like meteors land more often than you'd think, and no one gives a shit about them.
That we know of.
That's true. Maybe the government's covering all of them up, all I know.
I can almost hear the X-Files theme playing.
Well, I guess one of the things that's always bothered me about the Superman comics, and I feel like would be much harder to disguise in today's comics, or I guess maybe they still address it today, is
harder to pass off if you created Superman now.
Yeah, like, how do you not know that guy isn't Superman? He's the size of 10 logs strapped together. It doesn't matter if he's slouching and wearing glasses, he's still buff AF. It's gonna show. It doesn't matter what he wears.
Yeah, that's a suspension of disbelief thing.
Yeah.
I think that part of that is that people have such a hard time admitting that they might actually know Superman. Like, maybe people are thinking, there's no way I could know Superman.
It couldn't possibly be me.
Thanks for listening to the I Read Comic Books podcast. This episode was produced by Brian Murray and John Francois. The show's producer is Mike Rappin, and our editor is Xander Riggs. The music in this episode is brought to you by Infinity Shred. You can find more of Infinity Shred at infinityshred.com. Until we return on July 20th, our minisodes will be full of conversations about the series we're most excited about and the things in comics that make us think. Let us know what you're planning on reading this summer and what you've been thinking about in comics. You can send us email at ircb@destroythesybe.org. If our minisodes aren't enough, you can check out the backlog of episodes on our website, ircb.us, or through the podcatcher of your choice. You can find the entire podcast team on Twitter, and you can follow the show at ircbpodcast. And don't forget, you can join and spark conversations over on our subreddit at ireadcomicbooks.reddit.com. Until next time, from all of us here at the podcast, thank you for listening.